Capitalism. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, September 4th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Ken Jones, and Morgan. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Suzanne Potter, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and Mark Moran. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. Ken Jones will be speaking with the organizers of the Portland Writers Picnic.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
It's that time of year in Portland. You're wearing a sweater and rain shell one day, then stressing over an excessive heat warning the next. It's also time for the start of the school year. KBOO's fall membership drive, had to get that in, and what's now become an annual tradition, the Portland Writers Picnic. This year, the 8th annual Portland Writers Picnic takes place Sunday, September 8th at Laurelhurst Park from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And if you're a writer in or around Portland, you're invited. We're fortunate to have three of the picnic organizers and stars of the Portland writing community, Steve Arndt, Carmel Brannick, and Kate Rista, live in the KBOO studios to give us all the details. Steve, Carmel, Kate, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you.
Well, Steve, you helped organize the very first Portland Writers Picnic back in 2014. Can you give us just a little history and how it got started and grew into an annual event?
Well, I think I had the idea, and then it kind of started with the Henry Writings Group, and Liz Scott and Gigi Little were the very first volunteers at the very first picnic. And then it just grew from there, and we just made sure each year we try to get more people aware of it. We weren't professionals at doing something promoting, but we did our best, and it's just been.
But the attendance was more than you expected, right? I remember Gigi saying that last year.
Oh yeah, and I think this year is looking potentially pretty strong, too.
I was going to ask you that, about how many writers attend the picnic?
Well, it begins at 4 and ends at, I mean, it begins at 11 and ends at 4, so we'll have people come and go, and families will come and go, but if we added it all up, I bet you we have maybe 80 writers with some of them bringing family, and I think this year we could have more than that.
Boy, that's incredible.
Well, it is, but when you think about the writing community of Portland, I think the biggest problem I have is that I'll never know every writer in Portland. It's an amazing town for that, and we can also, this is a particular thing, but we can brag about the feminist voice in Portland, thanks to groups in Portland, Lydia Yukovich is another, that we have bragging rights about our feminist writers.
Oh wow! Yeah, well, a lot of great writers. Karen Russell, Lydia, of course.
Yeah, yeah. The picnic is. We really want entry level writers, or people that just had a whiff of an idea that they might like to write sometime.
I was just going to ask you that. Yeah. The group includes both established writers like you guys and newer ones, and maybe people who, I think, just have a dream to be.
Well, yeah, really, dream is the word, and. Writing is lonely and one that's hard to claim, especially when you're brand new. You know, you're afraid to tell people you're a writer, and you need buoyancy and you need support. And the picnic is a place where you can come and meet some friends. Maybe a writing group begins. Maybe you meet somebody to be a friend for the rest of your life. But the thrill is just being around people with similar sensitivities and kindnesses, and it's a safe place to be.
Well, Carmen, when we talked last year, you told us about your first writer's picnic. Entering the park that day must have been a mix of both anxiety and excitement.
It was definitely more exciting than anxiety-producing, because everybody here is so welcoming and friendly, and my husband and I felt welcome immediately. And Steve here is such a great connector and such a good friend, and he introduces people and just seems to know who should know everybody, and he makes everybody, as well as all the writers, are just wonderful here in Portland.
Truly, yeah.
Was there anybody you met at that first picnic, or maybe later ones, that you were kind of, oh my God, I'm talking to so-and-so, whatever?
I enjoy talking to everybody. I don't really want to name anyone, because then I leave somebody
leave out.
Yeah. But there are so many wonderful authors and writers here. Jenny Forrester, Sean Levy, Debbie Dodds, Amy Mason Doan, Dami, there's Laura, there's so many. And actually, a couple of years ago I met...
Renee.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, I met Grace Mattioli for the first time.
Well, I did an interview with her a few years ago. Huh?
Yeah, I went out and bought her books, and we've become good friends. She was at my house yesterday. So it's definitely a place to connect and meet wonderful people.
Now, let's say a new writer in town shows up Sunday. They don't know anyone at the picnic, and they're a little introverted, as many writers tend to be. How do they go about getting oriented and meeting their fellow writers? Is it just up to them to kind of mix and mingle and schmooze?
Yeah, I always think that like a good way to get your way into the picnic is go for the food, because there's lots of food everywhere. There's drinks, and getting some food and finding, just find yourself a snack. And then the easiest thing is that as writers, we can always ask each other that question of, what are you working on?
Icebreaker.
Right? And if somebody kind of blanks out while you say that, you can also say, well, what do you wish you were working on? And it's a good way into the conversation. And so you have your food. You can, if you get nervous, just take a drink of soda water or whatever, and then find your way around. And you can always go and bother Steve, and Steve will introduce you to everybody.
The connector.
We keep an eye out, though, for somebody that they are introverted, and some people come and you can tell that they're tiptoeing in, and we look out for those folks and do what we can without making them feel on the spot to get them in closer to the group. So,
now, Kate, as both an author and former executive director of Willamette Writers, you're a big part of the writing community. Do you remember your first writer's picnic? I think Steve said it was the very first in 2014. And what it felt like to be at an event like that.
Yeah, and so I'll plot spoil something for you. I am the executive director of Willamette Writers again.
Oh, okay. So I went to your website. It said former, and now you had something to do with the Resources Council. Or, okay.
Breaking
news.
Breaking news. So I spent a lot of time in the writing community, like you're talking about, and also with the science fiction and fantasy writers. And so it's kind of my favorite thing to be in writing communities as a way of like reaching out to writers and talking with writers. And my first picnic was started with Steve saying like, hey, I think I want to do this thing. And then can we invite everyone? And so it just became inviting, and bringing everyone in. And one of my favorite memories actually is with Laura Stanfill, where Laura had gone to New York like a couple of weeks before and went to this, specifically she saw a unicorn shop where there were a bunch of unicorn horns. And so she got me a unicorn horn and I wore it all around the picnic that whole year.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was great. Like, it's a lot of those little moments.
Now, Kate, you've published several novels, three middle grade series, Clockbreakers, Mythwakers, Wild Wings, a young adult series, Shadow Girl, and you've written essays in the New York Times and Washington Post. What's special for you about being a writer in Portland and this literary community?
I just love it. It's like Steve said, where everywhere you look, there's writers. And also, like, I tend to fall a lot into science fiction and fantasy, and the science fiction and fantasy community in Portland is so strong, and it's so fabulous. And
it's the land of Ursula.
Yeah, it's so great. Like, and yeah, all of us will spend hours.
Now, Steve, you're known, and I think that comes from what Carmel and Kate have been saying, as one of the kindest and most supportive writers in Portland. When we talked last year, Carmel again called you the connector. I wrote that down, and Gigi, who also helps organize the picnic, Gigi Little, said you were her gateway, in a good way, you know, not like marijuana to heroin. So besides the annual picnic, what can writers do to connect with the community here, besides just follow you around?
For me, it's been pretty easy. I'm an old guy with nothing to do, and I'm just returning the kindness that I've been given for 25 years now. These are people that remind me every day to be the best person I can. And that is the truth. And I love the excitement of meeting people with varied imaginations. And
you're just being with other writers. And I know you started with a lot of them in some of the early writing groups, like Dangerous Writers, Pinewood Table.
Yeah, my first writing teacher was Monica Drake, and then Tom Spanbauer for a long time, and then with
Dangerous Writers.
Stephen Allred and Joanna Rose at the Pinewood Table for quite a long time.
So some of the best teachers in town.
Oh, well,
in the country.
I mean, they gave me traction into writing that I never would have found otherwise, you know, and but anyway, to meet other writers, what I did, I just went to every reading I could possibly go to, anywhere I could find one. And there was a lot of bookstores open then that are closing up, but there's a lot of bookstores that are opening up again. So,
right. You mentioned one near Cabo now, Up Up Books.
Yeah. Tomorrow night, Alex Baer is reading from her book of poetry there tomorrow night. But I went to every book reading I could, except maybe a cookbook, and that was probably a mistake, because you never know when you're going to come back with something that feeds your own writing muscle in a really wonderful way, you know, a phrase or just some kind of craft that you might have heard. So,
now, Carmel, can you give us some of the logistics and details for this year's Writers' Picnic, date, time, location, what to bring, who's invited?
It's on Sunday, 11 to 4 on Sunday at Laurelhurst Park at Picnic Area D.
And I think there's a map online, because last year I asked about it. Gigi went home and her husband, Stephen O'Donnell, who's this amazing artist, I think put a map together of where Picnic Area D actually is in the park, near a pond.
Yes, it's near the Duck Pond. Mm.
I need to interject that Stephen O'Donnell's become a major contributor to the volunteers of our picnic.
Yeah, I read Gigi had a post about the picnic, and she said Stephen responded to a question that somebody asked about can any writer go, and he answered, if anyone wonders if they're a real writer, then they should definitely come.
There you go.
Very encouraging.
Yeah.
So if anybody out there fits that description, please show up on Sunday.
Yeah.
Now, Carmel, one more question. We have an excessive heat warning in effect for tomorrow through Saturday. In fact, it was, I think, 93 degrees when I got to the station about an hour or so ago. But the forecast I don't know if you've looked yet. For Sunday, looks very good. Cooler temps in the mid to high 80s. But do you plan for less favorable weather if the heat doesn't let up in time, or there's a few sprinkles, or maybe a swarm of yellow jackets? Or
oh, yeah, there were a few bees around last year. Well, we've got some fans, I think, and then we're going to have lots of water. And there is always a lot of shade in Laurelhurst because there's a lot of tall, beautiful trees. So I think if people come prepared and just aware that it could get hot, I think everyone will be okay. But definitely the trees in Laurelhurst help a lot, and we'll have a lot of water and a lot of drinks available. There'll be a lot of ice.
And it's a very promising forecast, as I said. I mean, mid-80s in Portland is paradise. Mm-hmm. Well, Steve, Carmel, Kate, thanks so much for joining us at KBOO.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for all you do for the Portland writing community, all three of you.
Same back to you, Kim.
Thank you.
We've been talking live in the KBOO studios with Steve Arndt, Carmel Branick, and Kate Rista about the 2024 Portland Writers Picnic, which takes place at Laurelhurst Park, Picnic Area D, this Sunday, September 8th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. All Portland area writers and their families are welcome. Just bring a dish to share and something you'd like to drink, ice coolers, paper plates, silverware, and that wonderful feeling of community provided. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm speaking with Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, about his latest story. It's called Grants Pass Scrambles to Meet Humanitarian Standards at New Outdoor Homeless Sites. Advocates say lack of water, shade, and other resources endanger people forced to live on a bare lot as hot weather continues. Welcome to the show, Jeremiah.
Hi, Althea. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. So Grants Pass, Oregon, won its Supreme Court case this past June, overturning court precedent that said it wasn't constitutional to punish homeless people for not having anywhere else to go. So now that that court ruling has changed, what has happened in the city since then?
Yeah, Grants Pass won that Supreme Court case. The court issued its opinion June 28th, saying that it's just constitutional to punish people. Grants Pass, I think, like a lot of other cities in the West, has been sort of trying to interpret what that means, particularly in light of the state law that says that basically upholds the Martin v. Boise decision, which said you cannot punish people when they don't have any other option. So kind of in those intervening weeks here, Grants Pass has started to pass various updates to the municipal code. On August 7th, they banned camping in the local parks and then also passed a resolution creating four new sites where people are, it's these sanctioned sites where people are allowed to go.
Well, it's been hot the past week in Grants Pass as homeless residents have been pushed into these approved camping sites. And immediately, advocates are raising the alarm that basic humanitarian needs are not being met. What is happening, or what was happening, at these sites?
Right. 2 weeks after they passed that resolution, creating these new sites, they opened two of them and forced everyone out of the parks. They gave 24 hours notice for people to leave, saying you have to go over here or elsewhere, although, again, people are not really, there are not shelters, there are not really a lot of good options for people. So, of course, they ended up in these sanctioned sites. There are roughly 100 people living at these sites. It is a concrete lot, with gravel and about half covered in dried grass. There's no shade being provided. The city has not provided water. And there are two porta potties. Now, there are four 4 porta potties. There were 2 last weekend, and a couple of dumpsters at this point. But I heard from somebody last night who works for this organization, Mint, who helps homeless people in Grants Pass, and he said that the dumpsters are starting to overflow, flies are starting to spawn, and he's really concerned that this is a bit of a public health emergency that, you know, could, you know, spread to the people living there and then beyond. Not to mention, this is in the middle, like you said, of a heat wave, and it reached 103 degrees last weekend. It's expected to reach 103 again Wednesday and Thursday. I will be down there this week, and we'll likely keep you posted soon on kind of how that goes. But people really don't have any other place that they can go, and they don't have any shade.
So after advocates raise the alarm that there's no shade, people are in danger if they don't have water or shade in heat like this, what did the city council decide to do?
The city called an emergency meeting in response to that. And so on August 28th, they did call this meeting, essentially saying that they would allow Mint, the organization, to, and UCAN is the other nonprofit organization that helps people experiencing homelessness in Grants Pass, they would allow them to deliver water and to stand up some tents. So these were not tents that were to, you know, for shade, that were to fire code. It was just something that they were kind of, it was like everyone's out there kind of DIY style with concrete mixers, like putting these things in buckets, trying to make sure they don't blow away. But they could really only do like one of them. These organizations are very understaffed. These are volunteer organizations. They don't get a ton of funding from the city, and they just are trying to cobble together what they can, but they're not a 24-hour service that can provide, you know, loads of water. They also, I should mention, have a cooling center that is not super close to the site. And so some people have been able, if they were kind of in a different area, they've been able to stay there, but it's not a 24-hour shelter. It's a navigation center and a place where people can cool down and get some water. So people are kind of out there and, you know, have really been exposed to elements.
Two components of these shelter sites I want to ask about. One, they're fenced in, and from what folks were telling you, they were padlocked for a portion. Is that right?
Right. I was told that for a period they were actually locked, like people were unable to leave. That didn't last very long, and certainly there would be a lawsuit if that lasted for any longer than it did. But people are allowed. I talked to the police chief, who told me people are absolutely allowed to leave, come and go as they like. The materially, people, you know these police officers, and so people don't, and they've been in town and they've been pushed from one place to another by the same people who would potentially punish them anyway. So it's not like people feel like free to suddenly roam around the city, because this is a city that has time and time again push them into areas like this. So with that said, the padlocks are closing off to traffic, and so people have been concerned that ambulances wouldn't be able to get to them. The organization Mint does do a lot of medical service, has done that for people living in parks, but they weren't at first able to get in because the gates were shut. And so they ended up getting a padlock, so now they can open and close the gate when they come and go to try to provide medical service to people. I should mention, too, that along these fences, people, you know, as they do, are very resourceful and wanted to hang up some tarps. And that was something that they were told that they couldn't do. So they cannot attach tarps above their tents to the fence.
The other component I wanted to ask about is the frequency at which homeless residents who've been pushed into these sanctioned sites, they have to move between them, or they're not allowed to stay there in one place for very long.
Right. No one can explain this to me, but the Grants Pass City Council, in that emergency meeting, August 28th, went back and forth for a long time trying to figure out exactly how long people would be allowed to stay there before they needed to move to the other site. So there's the J Street site and there's the A Street site, and they're, I believe, about a mile apart. And people are expected, at first they were expected to move every 96 hours from the J Street site and 24 hours from the A Street site. and then they kind of went to 96, and then ultimately ended up at people can stay at either site for a week, but then they'll get a 72-hour notice telling them that they need to move essentially to the other site because there's only two places for people to move. No one can explain what the purpose of that is to me. And Vanessa O'Shea, a Grants Pass City Councilor, actually brought this up too, saying, she said, I'd really encourage this council to look into the future, have an ounce of vision, and ask what the next goal is. Are we trying to get these people into housing, or are we trying to be cruel? Because largely what's left in these public sites are people who cannot walk. They're elderly people with walkers and wheelchairs, and we're telling them that they have to move every few days. I don't understand why. And there's really no answer for that, other than maybe potentially not wanting people to feel comfortable there.
Well, you mentioned one of the city councilors in Grants Pass. For some of the other ones, what is their attitude toward these camping sites as it's sort of been deliberated and iterated on in these past few weeks?
Much of the attitude actually lines up with how Grants Pass ended up in the middle of this case in the first place. You'll remember from reporting that in as early as 2013, a city council president said, we want the point here is to make people so uncomfortable that they will move on down the road. And Grants Pass has won this case now and seems to believe that they kind of have this mandate to be able to do whatever they'd like to the homeless population in Grants Pass. So one city councilor, Dwight Fasher, was concerned that the city would be on the hook to provide services in perpetuity if they provided any services now. He just said, we're not going to provide any more amenities to these sites other than the site itself. And Aaron Kubik is the city manager who seems to kind of be heading up a lot of this stuff. You know, he said that they really have no legal obligation to provide anything other than a place to stay. And he said the more sites and plans and services that are in place, the more staff and the other city resources that would be required to maintain those. Grants Pass is under the state law, ORS 195530, that says that these sites must be objectively reasonable. And it codified that Martin v. Boise decision. And so there's a bit of this game kind of playing what can sort of pass state law. There's a lot of explicit stuff that goes into the municipal code saying, like, in order to comply with state law X, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's happening materially. And the sort of intent here is a little bit overt if you watch these council sessions, which is we don't want to provide anything for them, but I guess we'll give them a water treatment facility.
And how has the public responded?
The public has been angry about this for a long time. Since, you know, COVID, since 2020, when the homelessness crisis was really exacerbated, the public has been upset. They're mostly upset kind of about drug use in parks, which is something that happens when people are experiencing homelessness. That is not the majority of people who are sleeping in these parks. Again, these are mostly elderly people with disabilities who have no other place to go. But they have a park watch group who has promised, you know, September 1st now, because possession of a controlled substance is illegal again in Oregon. This group has promised to go out. They post Facebook messages saying that they're going to start identifying who's selling drugs. They'll start to log their movements and descriptions, who is driving, license plate numbers, and their schedule. They'll have and share this info with the police. We go on the offense, camera and phones ready in hand. So I don't exactly know how the police feel about that, but when I talked to Police Chief Warren Hensman there, he didn't seem particularly concerned about this kind of vigilante sort of threats that are being made against people. The mayor, on the other hand, is a bit concerned about what people are saying they're going to do.
To your mind, what's next for Grants Pass?
There's technically still this federal injunction that has not been lifted yet, and that is certainly going to be lifted any day now. And that's when it's really going to change, like, the civil and criminal pieces of this. Like, people, the police chief said that they hadn't arrested anybody under these new ordinances yet. That's probably going to change when people start moving around. and that injunction is lifted. There is an emergency. They're going to declare an emergency Wednesday night. I'm going to be in Grants Pass covering that. And again, there's another heat wave going on right now. And so we're going to see what happens. But again, they're a bit of a, you know, potentially a bit of a lightning rod here in the sense that Oregon has a state law and they're a bit of a test case on what cities will be allowed to do to homeless people and whether or not the state has any sort of enforcement mechanism in place to keep people from throwing people onto concrete lots and not providing things like water, basic humanitarian stuff.
If listeners are interested in reading your work for themselves, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, the best way to get Street Roots is to buy a physical copy from a vendor. They're in your neighborhood, and they accept cash, Venmo, and tips. And you can also find us at streetroots.org.
Thank you, Jeremiah, for coming on to talk with us about this.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, speaking with me about his latest story. It's called Grants Pass Scrambles to Meet Humanitarian Standards at New Outdoor Homeless Sites. Advocates say a lack of water, shade, and other resources endanger people forced to live on a bare lot as hot weather continues. More information is online at streetroots.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea.
You're tuned to listener-supported community radio KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.